In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier. Amen. Please be seated. My name is Bruce Freeman. I am the rector of the parish of St. Matthew, and I also knew Katie Cadigan when. Katie and I were, before the service, looking at each other and said, 25 years ago, we were in the same parish up in the Bay Area. Katie, being a layperson, a noted national documentarian, and me, your basic congregational priest, can you imagine that 25 years later, we would be following each other, preaching in this pulpit after this event of the fire? No, we couldn't. And what makes it harder for me is that Katie had a much bigger task than I have today. Last week, she had to deal with a bunch of readings that were where fire was featured way too soon. And then she had to deal with the St. Matthew's community present here, stunned and smoky, really not even sure where they were. And then she was able to tie it all together into our share with the shared commitment to the fact that we are all one body, one piece of the same flesh and body. We are part of each other, and we will walk together. So, thank you, Katie. Thank you, Nate. Thank you to the people of St. Augustine's for allowing us to worship with you, to walk with you, and to be very honest, rest a bit with you. Thank you for opening your spaces and hearts to our school this last week for their first chapel service since the fire happened. And thank you for saying yes to our music guild to put on concerts here in this beautiful space. Thank you. Last week, St. Augustine's gave the St. Matthew's community an ovation. And I would appreciate it, St. Matthew's, if we could show our appreciation by saying thank you. Today we have readings which are truly lovely. The reading from the wedding at Cana and of Galilee. And I just realized, listening to Nate read that reading, why this is the Episcopal National Gospel.
After they become drunk.
At the core, of course, are themes of marriage and then of God's steadfast, and I think most importantly at the center of all the readings today was God's deep concerns for the simple needs of the people of God. Not for nothing, Jesus's first miracle was at a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the wine ran out. Just the wine ran out, and it was a social faux pas, and he provided wine in its finest form. God in Jesus sees us and sees even our smallest needs, hopes and feelings, and assures us we are not alone. Kind of need to hear that this week. But as I was thinking about this this Sunday, I couldn't pull these readings into something cogent that would fully kind of capture, I think, this moment for St. Matthew's, St. Augustine's, and really for our broader community. And where my mind kept going was the simple center of what we call the Old Testament, the exodus of Israel from servitude and slavery in Egypt into the wilderness of Sinai to be free as they traipsed, as they trudged, as they journeyed towards the promised land. It is a seminal event. It is a seminal story about for how we see our faith, how we see ourselves as people of faith, how we see the nature of life itself and of God, God's self. This story of the Exodus, first a disclaimer, I'm not saying that we are literally like the poor, the oppressed, and life-risking ancient Israelites. We live on the west side of Los Angeles. We can't do that. We're not that. However, we have, like all humans who have ever lived, and just like those Israelites, experienced a loss, a change of the first order that has brought all of us to a new place, a place that's different than the old place, to a new understanding of ourselves, and I hope in the future to a new understanding of community and of the very nature of God. But we're not there yet. There's a couple elements I think are in commonality with the Israelites with us today. As they ventured into the wilderness on their uncertain way into the promised land, you might have thought that as they left Egypt, servitude, slavery, oppression, poverty, and had been saved by God, getting through the Red Sea, and heard the promises from Moses that they would be going to the promised land, and God would in every way empower them to be the new people of God, God's people in the promised land of Palestine. You'd think they would be exultant through and through, right? Yeah, not so much. And I think the temptation for many of us is to look to go from here to the future, that moment where the St. Matthew's people will be going into its sanctuary, remediated of all the smoke, to this moment when St. Augustine's gets to get rid of these smoky people who are here in the space, to the moment when all of us personally will find a place where we are renewed, we are rehomed, we are reconnected. Yes, but isn't it wonderful? But yes, but the truth is, the Israelites were grieving. They had given up everything they knew and thought they had known to follow this Moses into a completely new life. They had lost everything, even that which was incredibly lousy. They had lost it. And so they grumbled at Moses. "It would be better if we had never left Egypt, Moses. At least we had food there. At least we had this there. At least we had a job to go to. At least we had..." Right? Etc., etc., etc. Grieving. We are all grieving. Even those of us who haven't lost our homes, your grief, your guilt. I was laughing with some folks outside earlier about how they're just feeling miserable that their house is still standing when so many folks are not. That is a grief of the first order of compassionate, empathic people. Even the members of St. Augustine, you have to be grieving. I spoke with a man as he came out of the 8 o'clock service, and he was talking about how, in many ways, having St. Matthew's was the best thing that could have happened to St. Augustine. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah. You know, here we are over here with our lovely parish, not knowing how to be helpful with people who have lost everything in some cases. And so all of a sudden we have a vocation, right? But it's not the same as it was. It's still a loss, friends. The landmarks are not the same. This last week, on Wednesday, I met via Zoom with colleagues from the Altadena, Pasadena area. We met with specialists in emergency management, the bishop and Canon Melissa McCarthy, and a rep from Episcopal Relief and Development, whose chair and president of Episcopal Relief and Development International will be preaching here on February 2nd, by the way. We were just sharing with each other, you know, what's it been like the last 7 days? What have you been thinking about? And how's that been? And got around to my turn, and as usual, I basically said exactly what was on my mind, unfiltered, and here it came. You know, St. Matthew's people are going, yeah, 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 yeah. And I told them that for the first 7 days after the fire, I was living on cortisol and adrenaline, figuring everything out, feeling some hope, trying to instill hope in my people. But now, 8 days out, not feeling so much. Confusion, sadness, sense of just loss. And can I say this out loud? Just a modicum of despair. I think there's a lot of us here who feel that way. You know, really getting up and putting a toothbrush across my teeth was an effort on Wednesday and Thursday. The professionals listened to me whine, complain, and then they said, with the most gentle compassion, "Oh yeah, you've got disaster brain." That's what I did. I laughed. And they said, "No, really, no, this is really normal. And if you don't go there, you don't go anywhere from this. Sadness and suffering about our loss, confusion, anxiety about the present moment, and a very restless not knowing about the future is really what typifies this kind of grieving. Just like with the Israelites who were walking around the wilderness, not knowing what was going to come next, thinking that they lost all their power, all their normality, we too are in that moment. All of us. We're all one body. So, just one other Exodus element that I think should be important for us, and it revolves around, where is God in all of this? A basic question of trust and of faith about where is God? What are the most valuable things we have to pay attention to right now? What should we be worshiping? Now, we all know that the Israelites had a particularly hard time with this particular aspect. Moses, who was doing his best as a leader to discern God's call and direction, would often go up a mountain to commune directly with God to figure out how to deal with this wilderness about which he knew nothing. Of course, you know what's coming. As he came down the mountain, he saw that his people, scared and lost, were worshiping a golden calf made by melting their available gold. They were grasping for something tangible and powerful in their seemingly powerless and despairing space. Who can blame them, really? They were trying to find a way to make sense of where they were in their confusion, in their pain, in their depression. So down the hill came Moses and saw that they were worshiping the golden calf, and God's anger was raised by their actions, and Moses interceded to save his people. And God relented, as God always does. This behavior recurred several times before they were able to enter the promised land. Indeed, and this is really important, the leadership also struggled with this very same issue. Where is God in this, and how am I to relate that to the people of God who I am leading? Moses and his brother Aaron had so many moments of indecision and doubt. So where is God in this moment, what we're sharing together, and what are our golden calves? Golden calf number one, thinking that we can deal with all of our challenges by ourselves. If ever there was a moment when we should lean into community of friends, neighbors, and fellow Episcopalians, this is it. Golden calf number two, belief that our leaders will figure it out and make it all better. It should probably go without saying, right, in this political environment, that we've kind of left that one behind anyway. But I need to say this out loud. Our leaders will need support and our encouragement to discern the wise pathway for healing and restoration at a whole lot of different levels, from the national to the state to the regional, to our community, to our churches, to Nate trying to figure out how to deal with this smoky remnant in his midst, to our leadership of our families and of our neighborhoods. I've received, by the way, just a really lot of supportive emails nationally from various leaders around the country. And also right here, Ben Allen, our representative, has been just particularly supportive and helpful in thinking about how we can be together, not solving problems in immediacy, but being here with each other through this process. Golden calf number three. Thinking God can't turn water into wine. We're Episcopalians. We want to believe this, right? but oftentimes we don't believe it. Thinking that we shouldn't bring our real feelings and honest pain and true doubt to God in prayer or in conversation with friends. This is so critical, friends, that we bring who we are right now to God, like all sorts of Old Testament and New Testament figures, including Jesus, bringing through prayer our feelings, our hopes, our doubts, our joys, and gosh, our anger. We have to be honest with God. And the phrase of prayer that I want to offer right now is the phrase, we have to lament. We have to lament the situation we're in. Without lamenting, we can't move on. It's not possible. We have to keep our prayer life fresh by being honest with God. And there's no form for that. Everyone has a different way to do that. Everyone has the opportunity to do that. But we have to somehow raise our eyes and be honest with God and get that movement going with the divine in our midst who will bring us to another place. Theologian Dorothy Soley, in her book, Suffering, said, and it must be stressed, that if the suffering of the moment is not allowed expression, there is, she wrote, a corresponding disappearance of passion for life and of the strength and intensities of its joys. Finding ourselves in this state of suffering or numbness, we must find ways of expressing the deep pain and anguish we feel, or we're going to be destroyed by it or made completely numb with apathy. Lament is a necessary stage in the creative resolution of terrible situations and suffering. This opens the new pathway through and ahead. We have entered into a wilderness, not of our choosing, that is for sure. But God most certainly is here, waiting for our lament, waiting for our cries, waiting even for our anger. And we are called to bring ourselves and to know that God will move in us, move in you, move in me, and move in our communities to bring us to that next stage where creativity and possibility really exist. I want to end by reading a poem by Christine Walters Paintner, who wrote this poem, which I think has a title which really speaks to me, A Blessing for the Underworld Journey. Holy One who is ever present, even in our darkest nights and descents to the underworld, bless us with a felt sense of your abiding. As life strips away all our comforts and securities, everything we thought we needed, help us to build our endurance and strengthen our vision to see the shimmering in the night. It is so hard to stay here. We want to run to brighter fields, to numb ourselves to the anguish. Bless us even in the running and the numbing, and help us to guide us back to presence, to the call of this journey, which is to move through, to let it break our hearts, to release all of our old sacred images so we might embrace a more expansive sense of you, God, source and holy mystery. Help us to gently release our sense of being victim and embrace our sovereignty so that our darkest nights can one day become luminous with grace for others. In God's name, amen.